Welcome to this podcast from Christchurch London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org. I'm going to read from our passage for today before I introduce our speaker. So why don't you turn with me to Joshua 1. I'm going to skip around a bit, but it should come up on the screen behind me. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, "Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan, but all your fighting men, ready for battle, must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them." Would you welcome to the stage David Stroud, who's going to be preaching to us today.
Thank you, Vicky, very much. Morning, everyone. And a very happy new year for those of you that are just back. And thank you for those of you that have asked after the Stroud family Christmas. We had a great time. Hope you had a great time. Did all the things that you're meant to do at Christmas. Lots of sleep, lots of rest, lots of food, lots of family and friends. Came into the new year feeling good. In fact, the day before I was due back in the Christchurch London office, I woke early and just fully awake. I thought, oh, I feel ready, which is just as well, because we are about to make the single biggest change that we've made to Christchurch London since its start 11 years ago. For the first half of Christchurch London's existence, we actually met at 4:30 in the afternoon only. This service didn't exist. About half our life ago, we moved here and we started this service. As of next Sunday, as has already been said, we meet in four locations, photographed behind me. And if you haven't decided, you can shop around. Whether I say you can or not, you will, so you might as well. So for some of you, of course, you know exactly where you're going to be. For others of you, do check out the services which work at convenient time for you and find a home. It's been fascinating this morning seeing different people's reactions to this change. Children, I'm told, who woke up this morning and said to their parents, "Is today the day we go to our new church?" No, one more week to wait. Adults who've come in this morning not quite sure whether to be sad or excited. Sad because they're going to see less of some people who have become very good and dear friends. Excited because they get to live out something they've dreamt and prayed and worked about for some time in terms of a new church service in a location that matters to them. And also the musicians, who I will have you know said to me this morning, just how rock and roll can we be? Do we get to smash instruments today? And then they feigned surprise when I said I didn't think that that was a good idea. But wherever you are at this morning in terms of your emotions, and I understand there'll be a whole spectrum. Some of us nervous, some of us sad, some of us uncertain, some of us just extremely excited. That wherever you're at, I hope that what I've got to say today will help us as we think about how we're now going to live out our lives together. The dream is this. The dream is loads and loads of services right across this city that result in this city being a better place to live, where people flourish more. Society does better because of the way we, as well as many others, get to serve this city, and where many, many people come to faith as well. And I'm a big fan of dreams. And I'm a big fan of dreams because I have, over the years, met dreamers who have done extraordinary things. Here's one of the early examples in my life. So the lady, again, photo will come up behind me. Her name is Jackie Pullinger. And I met Jackie immediately after having graduated from university. Jackie pursued a very unusual dream. Her work was based around an old slum area of Hong Kong. It was known locally as the City of Darkness because the rooms, and they were all single room dwellings, were built so closely together that there was no natural light. That was a typical picture. You had to be careful. The pipes over the top were tapping electricity illegally from the surrounding area, and there was some sort of fluid dripping from the pipes. It was not really quite clear what it did other than it bleached your hair and your clothes, which of course some people thought was a better idea than others. You would clap your hands and the rats would run away from you, and you had to be careful not to fall into the open sewers on either side. It was a police no-go area too, so as you would imagine, it became a centre for brothels, drug dens, child labour, all controlled by the local triad gangs. But Jackie, the woman I met, the dreamer, said that she didn't understand why everyone didn't think this was the most wonderful place on earth. And she was really very confused as to why not everybody wanted to live there. Because she said the first time she went in her early 20s, she had a vision in her mind's eye. And she said that in this vision, she saw strong, healthy young men working and raising their families rather than engaged in the destructive pursuits of drug taking, making, and crime. She saw women in her mind's eye walking around with a sense of dignity and self-worth and the like, rather than simply as objects to satisfy a man's desire. She saw children playing happily on the streets rather than locked in their rooms, sometimes for 16 hours a day, so that both mum and dad could work. She saw in her mind's eye old men sitting on street corners watching life go by rather than cowering in the corners of their rooms to find a sense of safety. And that dream, if you like, became her life's work. I got to just be part of it for a short amount of time. To help this area, the City of Darkness, otherwise known as the Walled City, become something very different. And during her lifetime, many of the inhabitants of the Walled City came to faith. Many men found freedom from drug addiction. Many families were rebuilt. In fact, the leader of the triad gangs controlling that area also came to faith. If I were to take you to that site now near the old airport, you would find, rather than a city, that the authorities have replaced it with this beautiful garden. And you would actually find a plaque on a wall in that garden recording Jackie Pullinger's name and the recognition that this country gave her by way of an MBE. And there's a picture here of her receiving her MBE. That's at Buckingham Palace. And on her right-hand side is Ah Ping, former triad gang leader, now follower of Jesus, former heroin addict, now free and healthy. And as you can imagine, living alongside someone with those sort of dreams was somewhat contagious. Now, my observation would be, however, that people get pretty cynical about dreams quite quickly. And I wonder whether one of the reasons is that it just gives the impression that life's a bit of a walk in the park. You know, have a dream, live it out, no problem, great life. And of course, it doesn't work that way. And I would be entirely misleading if I gave you that impression about this lady. Jackie didn't have enough money to come back to the UK when her father died. She missed his funeral. She didn't sleep for a decade because she invited heroin addicts into her house. She didn't have a rehab center, so she took what she had and used that instead. After a considerable amount of time, everything that she did seemed to evaporate, and she had to start again. Dreaming is not a walk in the park, but when they are dreams that are created or originate in some way in heaven, then they're very worth living out. And the question of dreams is important as we start our new series with the book of Joshua. Because unless we understand that dynamic of dreams, we won't understand this book. You see, the people of Israel had had a dream right back to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. And for Abraham, this dream was, one day my people will have a land. And in this land, God will do so many good things, it will fill this land and then fill the whole earth. And in every generation, this dream was reinforced. You'll see some verses up behind me with Isaac and with Jacob, and we could go right on. Generation after generation, the family that was following Yahweh, following God, was living with this sense of a dream. And the Bible talks a lot about this. It doesn't typically use the word dream, does occasionally, but it uses the word or the metaphor inheritance. This idea that there is something set up for us to go and get. Now, our inheritance in the New Testament, firstly and primarily, is our relationship with God and all the good things that come from that. But it's also often things that we're meant to do. I think Jackie Pullinger's inheritance was driving out the darkness of that city, seeing so many good things happen there. I wonder whether you have a sense of inheritance, a sense of some things that are particularly set aside for you to do or you to contribute to in one way or another. Maybe they start with yourself, darkness that needs dealing with in your own life, maybe with the course that Andy and Meta were talking about earlier, or serving others in such a way that darkness recedes in their lives as well. But this idea of inheritance is not just one for individuals, but for whole churches. And I want to suggest this morning that as we look at the book of Joshua and the inheritance of those people thousands of years ago, that we can learn from it because we too have an inheritance. That there is something for us as a church, and this is the next step. Before Stroud family even moved to London, I remember an individual, a friend of mine, who functions essentially as a bishop overseeing many churches, he came to me and he said, as I have been praying for you, I keep thinking about the skyline of London. And I believe that you are to go to London and you're to start a church, and he said, that affects the skyline. By which I don't think he meant that we were going to create some amazing new cathedral next to London Eye, which would change it in physical terms. He was suggesting, know that in some deeper way, if you like, in some fundamental way, we may get to contribute to the fabric of this city. Now, of course, many people would say, well, that is a rather ridiculous or huge or silly thing for any group of people to imagine, think, or pray about. And I would agree with you, other than the fact that the Apostle Paul says to the Ephesians that God can do more than we can ask or imagine. And this, for me, was at least somewhere between asking and imagining. It was something huge, but it's something that has stayed with us ever since. Maybe God would use an ordinary group of men and women, because that's what he does. He takes very ordinary groups of men and women, and maybe he could use us in such a way that at least some of the communities in this city might be fundamentally changed for the better, and individual lives fundamentally changed for the better as well. Maybe that is part of our inheritance. Now, there is a difference, however, between inheritance as we normally talk about it and inheritance as the way the Bible talks about it, which is this. If your grandparents have saved up £100 for you for your inheritance, you have got to do nothing to go and get it. You just wait. And eventually, it will become yours. But the biblical idea of inheritance is different. The idea there is there is something for you, but you have to go and get it. Joshua had to literally take his people into the land and get it. If he just sat around waiting for somebody to pop their clog so that they would get it, it would never have happened. It's a much more active idea. And this can take a whole lifetime to do. It did for Jackie Pullinger, it did for Joshua, and maybe it will for us as a church as well. Certainly, I have no other plans. I'm here in order to see what will happen as we get to serve this city. Given all that, it seems to make sense that we should ask the question, well, what habit should we adopt if we want to be those who see dreams come about, who take our inheritance, if you like? And these can be applied personally, or they can be applied, as we'll apply them today, to the life of the church. And I want to draw three lessons from the scripture that Vicky read to us, which is set as Joshua and all the people are standing on the edge of the Jordan. They're looking over to their promise, their inheritance, the promised land. And before they go, Joshua is given a whole set of instructions, a number of which I would suggest are pretty pertinent to us. So here they are. We won't take too long over them this morning. Number one, be strong and very courageous. Be strong and very courageous. Now this, of course, is not the strength that you develop in the gym pumping iron. This is inner strength that you develop as you draw on the life of God. So why would we want, and why would Joshua need strength? Joshua needed strength because he was going to take initiative. We will need strength because we too will need to take initiatives. Joshua and the priests literally had to walk down to the River Jordan, and we'll see this as we go through the book, and they had to put their feet in the Jordan before God worked a way for them. The waters opened up and they were able to go across. But in the same way, we too need to take initiative. Tim Frisbee had to knock on the door of Platanus College for about 4 months before they talked to him. He had to keep going because I know for Tim and Jackie, they feel part of their inheritance is a service in that area of London. If we are to start a service a year, and I meant to say this at the beginning, that's our prayer. Our prayer isn't just, oh, let's do four services. Our prayer is, let's do four services this year, and then let's do one every year from then on. Now, if we're going to do anything like that, then it's going to require some of you to take initiative. Because guess where we're going to find the next service leader? Somewhere in this room right now. A man or a woman who says, that is part of what is in my heart. And I, therefore, am going to take initiative. I'm going to press on. I am going to look to make that happen. Strength gives us that freedom, that ability. Initiative is for us all. If you are sitting close to someone that you've not met before, I hope at some point this morning you will take initiative. Stretch out a hand, say, hi, my name is, don't know you. You know what I mean. And I hope you'll do that next week as we go to new services and trust that we'll have new people, says he, desperately trying to recover. Strength provides us the ability to take initiative. It also gives us the ability to keep going. It's remarkable how easy a good idea, how clearly a good idea then becomes a dim, lacking clarity idea as difficulty comes our way. Financial difficulty, relational conflict, losing the flat or the house that we've been living in, whatever it is, strength helps us endure difficulty. And as it says in Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy, he says, if you want to live a godly life, there's one thing I can promise you. You will have difficulties. Now, strength, as we draw on the life of God, enables us to take the blows of life a bit like a boxer in the ring. A good, strong boxer takes blows without flinching. Takes more blows than you think that they could endure and enables them to keep going. And I want to suggest, if we are to fill this city with service after service after service, working, of course, in collaboration with all the other churches that are here, if we're to do that, then enduring strength will be a feature of our lives. There are many examples of this which could inspire us. Superman is one of them. Or should I say, Christopher Reeve, the actor behind Superman. Many of you know his story. Thrown from a horse while competing at an equestrian event, he became paralyzed, living the rest of his life with a ventilator and in a wheelchair. And for many people, I suspect for many of us, once we found ourselves from able-bodied to wheelchair, you would be thinking, that really is enough. I'm not sure that I can manage life or do anything else. Not for Christopher Reeve. He was like a human dynamo. He was campaigning on behalf of spinal cord injuries. He managed, his contribution was significant in persuading the American government to double the amount of money available for certain conditions. He got the world's top neuroscientists together and persuaded them to make their life mission dealing with some of the elements of these sorts of conditions. He lived in a remarkable way. But here is what he said. He said this. He said, "I think a hero is an ordinary individual who finds the strength to persevere and endure in spite of overwhelming obstacles." And I want to suggest that if you define a hero like that, an ordinary person who keeps going despite huge obstacles, I want to suggest that Christchurch London needs lots and lots of those as well. In fact, even leaving Christchurch London aside from it, I would just suggest you need to be that sort of person for your life. So where do we get that sort of strength from? Well, it's interesting in this passage, Joshua doesn't get told where. He just gets told, be strong. Which suggests that he could be if he wanted to be. You see, Joshua was made in the image of God, just as every man and woman in this room has been made in the image of God. Now, if we're made in the image of God, one of the qualities we have, surely, however hidden and however feelingly remote in our lives, is strength. Is strength. But also, of course, as we develop a relationship with God and as we grow in that relationship, Christ is living within us. We could spend ages looking at this dynamic, but Paul, when writing to the Ephesians, he says the life of resurrection power is now in your life. Or John puts it like this. He says, "You, dear children, are from God and have overcome them because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world." Christchurch London, my encouragement as we go to four services in four different locations is to decide right now, I will draw on the life of God to be strong. And for many of us looking across a crowd this size in a room like this, we'll have particular individual challenges in our lives right now. And just as the Spirit spoke to Joshua, so maybe the Spirit needs to say to you right now, be strong. And the answer is not, well, I can't. But it's understanding I'm made in the image of God and Christ is within me. And this enables me to live with extraordinary strength that others will not understand, but which is a gift that is available to me. That's the first thing I want to suggest for us. Christchurch London, be strong. Secondly, to Joshua, be obedient. You see, obedience is the secret to the Christian strength. Who was the strongest man to have ever lived? I think it was Jesus Christ. When was the moment he demonstrated his strength more than at any other time? I want to suggest it's when he said, "Not my will, but yours be done." My observation is when people say that, there is genuine strength in his life. How do you do that? How do you get to the point? I mean, that's a big deal, isn't it? Not my will, but yours. Not my plans, but yours. Not my use of my money, but yours. Not the job I want, but yours. How do you get there? Well, the way that Jesus did it was day by day, minute by minute, he said, "I only do what I see the Father doing." In other words, it was like there was this practice, this habit, listening to the promptings of the Spirit and responding to them. That makes sense when Joshua is told, don't walk to the right or the left, just walk straight on. And when Jesus lived that way, people said of him, there were two comments made about Jesus, two things that amazed people. People would say, where does he get his authority from? He doesn't talk like other religious leaders. This man's got genuine authority. Where's that from? Well, no one knew because it was in secret, but it was because of his obedience. And then others would say, he's so wise, where does he get his wisdom from? Well, no one could work it out, but it was because it was done in secret. It was because of his obedience. And so, as Joshua is about to set out on battle after battle after battle, he's told first, not just be strong, but be obedient, because it's in your obedience that your strength lies. Oh, how's that going? How's that going in private? What are the standards anyway? Well, Joshua's told, meditate on the book of the law. Read the scriptures. Am I the only person here who sometimes struggles with drift? Who sometimes finds that the values of society, of the people around me, tend to be what I accommodate myself to rather than living at what the Bible sometimes calls a higher standard? Am I the only one who finds that a challenge? And that's why we're told meditate on the scriptures, because they keep calling us, they keep reminding us, no, don't hate, don't resent, forgive. They keep reminding us, no, don't hoard, be generous. They keep reminding us, no, don't get preoccupied with yourself, love. And so this picture emerges of the sort of men and women that we're to live as, with strength. But people say, well, where do they get their strength? Well, it's through hidden obedience and through hidden regular reading of the book. Read the book. It'll do you good. Feed you with strength, actually. I was chatting with a couple of friends who came in first thing this morning. They're relatively new to church, and one of the things they've started doing since they've been here is started reading the Bible. And my friend said, I've been loving the Bible. I've almost finished. What's the next one? I mean, like, I've read Game of Thrones, and then there's another one. I said, no. The good thing about the Bible is you can read it a second time, and you'll see a whole load of things you didn't see the first time. The more that you read it, the more that you become like the values that it espouses, and the more it connects you with the one who has made you to live in that way anyway. Christchurch London, be strong, very courageous. Courage is the ability to use your strength in good ways. Be obedient. And thirdly, care for one another. Care for one another. Here's going to be the challenge as we go to four services. This is what all my friends who have done this ahead of me, and there's a number particularly around the world, few in the UK, who've done this. Here's what they all say to me. You will be amazed how quickly everyone forgets about every other service apart from the one that they're going to. And I've said, no, I haven't. It's already started. Now, what's interesting is there's a dynamic here, because my appeal is love your service, but do not forget the whole city. Because we will become smaller people and a smaller church if we forget the expanse of the city rather than just the locality. We have to do both. Now, there's a parallel here in this passage, and it goes like this. Three tribes have their inheritance on the eastern side of the Jordan. They've not got to get across this big obstacle, the water, in order to get their inheritance. So it would be very tempting for them all to sort of, you know, there's no seats here. If there were, I would sit down at this minute in time and say, okay, bye, rest of you. Hope it goes well. You know, we're okay now. And you know what Joshua said? He said, fighting men, you've got to come with us. And you do not get to rest until every tribe has got their inheritance. Christchurch London, however well your service goes, do not rest until the city is full of thriving services. Two or three practical things I want to suggest for that. First of all, pray for the success of each service, not just your own. We'll have an opportunity to do that before we're done. Pray for the success of every service. Secondly, be prepared to help a service that is not your own. There could be two reasons why another service would need help. Firstly, it may just need a few more people for a while. Or it may just need a few more workers for a while. Well, some of you have said to me, I plan to work at one service and go and attend another. Wonderful. Understand, not everyone can do that. But if you can, and if there's a call goes out, you know, we could do with some more help here or there, whether it's this year or next year or the year after, then I want to encourage you, be ready to do that. That's like the tribes of Manasseh and the other ones who said, no, we'll come over with you. We'll fight your battles. We'll rest when it's all done. There's another reason, though, why you may be needed to help. And that is if one service finds itself having extraordinary success. One of the members of our council of reference, Paul McConaughey, told me the story of his church where a team decided to start to offer prayer for the sick on the streets of Sheffield on Saturday afternoons. He said it was an extraordinary success. He said they had huge crowds of people wanting prayer. They had some most remarkable things happen when people were prayed for in terms of recovery. And they had lots and lots of people who started coming to faith as a result. As a result, the Connect group that had started it was entirely overwhelmed. And so they called out and they said to a number of other Connect groups who had different missions, would you mind stopping for the minute and helping us? And they did. And there was a remarkable outbreak of God's blessing as a result of that. So we care for one another. We care for one another in our struggles. We care for one another in our successes. And also, when we do gather back together again, we regard it as a priority. Can I ask you to do that? On the last Wednesday in February, we will be gathering in a venue on Oxford Street to pray. Not just one service, but all together. On May the 10th, is it? Next. On May the 8th, we have our Love London Sunday. Anticipating that we will have that here, everyone will be coming back together. We will not be meeting in our separate services on that day. My encouragement to you, make that a priority. That's not the day to go to the beach or go and see the parents. That's the day to be here together, May the 8th. Make a note of it in your diary. And we will at least twice next year, probably three times on an annual basis from now on, we'll stop however many services we've got across the city. We'll gather together in order to be able to encourage each other, hear news from one another, and hear what the Spirit is saying to us as a result. Maybe the band could come back, please. So in conclusion, we are at an incredibly important part of our history. We stand with a new part of our inheritance ahead of us. And I genuinely believe this city can be better off as people have lives rebuilt, communities strengthened, and culture renewed because of the way that we and many others serve this city. Will it be difficult? Yes, that's why we need strength. Will we be tempted to compromise? Absolutely, that is why we're told to be obedient. Will relationships become strained? Probably, that's why we're told to care for one another. Will it be worth it? Absolutely. In my opinion, anything that brings glory to Jesus is worth it. I think this could bring huge glory to God, point many people towards him as a result. Let's do it together. God bless you as you go, and God bless you too as you stay here. Let's stand together, and the Rich and the band are coming back and they'll lead us.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.